Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey welcoming you once again to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. It's a program aimed at basically 55 to 75s, but not strictly in that age group. Sort of those of us maybe leaving work and entering retirement and those wonderful later years. And it's now my pleasure to say bienvenuti to Virginia Collins. Virginia, you have just come back from overseas, and namely Italy.
Indeed. And, you know, I can't actually even remember what it is I'm supposed to say in terms of hello, goodbye. But none of the Italians that I came across spoke English.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. So there was a lot of hand movement.
So how's your Italian?
My Italian is nothing, but my hand movements are good. The eyes, the hands, I can say all sorts of things just using my hands. But Italy was beautiful.
Excellent.
Quite cold. Rome is fascinating, mm-hmm. and you can walk until your feet fall off, and every corner is a surprise.
Is that right?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Did you go and see the Trevi Fountain and all those things we've seen in the movies over the years?
Yes, I saw the Trevi Fountain, and the Trevi Fountain you couldn't actually see for the crowds.
Is that
unbelievable
so?
Unbelievable crowds. And the Vatican, the same thing. All those gorgeous places, and they tell me that that's not very crowded yet.
Huh? And one thing, I believe the word beer is the same in every language.
Every language,
if you're a beer
drinker,
it's okay.
You just put up one finger and have beer, one finger, café, and that's it. That's all you need.
Oh, who wants anything else? Yeah. Well, welcome home. Nice to have you back, and we're going to hear from you in just a moment. Hey, we've got an interesting program today. First up, we've got Help for Older Job Seekers. And how Ronnie became a pianist at the age of 90. It's never too old. And here's a wonderful question. Would you like to take part in a cannabis study? We've got a lot of volunteers. I believe we're going to tell you how to do that. First up today, it's over to you, Virginia.
Yes, this is the new scheme to aid older job seekers, and it's from the seniors newspaper, www.theseniors.com.au in employment. A new federal government program will help jobless older people and those in danger of unemployment improve their work skills and move into jobs. The Skills Checkpoint for Older Workers program provides older work seekers with guidance and training to help them transition to new roles within their current industry or with pathways to help them move to a new career. It's run by employment and training services provider Verto in New South Wales, Victoria and the ACT, and the Busy Group in Queensland, South Australia, Western Australia, Tasmania and the Northern Territory. The $17.9 million program is designed to help people aged 45 to 70 who are currently employed but at risk of unemployment, or those recently unemployed and not registered for assistance through an unemployment services program. Karen Andrews said it was important for all Australians to think about upskilling or reskilling as they age. We are all living longer and need to plan for this, she said. There is a world of opportunities out there, and the Skills Checkpoint for Older Workers program will assist people to make the most of these opportunities. As the age at which Australians can access the age pension steadily rises, workers either have to stay in paid work longer or survive on Newstart unemployment benefits. On July 1 this year, the pension age will rise to 66, increasing in 6 months increments every 2 years to age 67 by July 2023. A controversial plan to increase age pension eligibility to 70 years was axed by Prime Minister Scott Morrison last year. Australian Institute of Health and Welfare data shows 12.9% of 65-year-olds were in the workforce in 2015, on par with Canada, but ahead of the UK at 10.7% and Germany at 0.6%. The US and New Zealand had 19.1% in the workforce, China 21.9%, and Papua New Guinea 52.7%. To contact Verto, ring 1300 483 786 and www.verto.org.au www.thesenior.org.au, and that was from www.thesenior.com.au.
You with Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Some interesting advice there. How to get a job in our later years.
Well, from trying to get a job to what you're going to do when you don't have a job, but it's a lot of fun. So this is, again, from www.thesenior.com.au, and it was on the 29th of April this year, and it's about music, the key for James at 93. So, 93-year-old James Lowe can't read a note of music and is missing a thumb on his right hand. But that hasn't stopped the New South Wales aged care resident teaching himself to play piano in his ninth decade. And he's proud to be such a good teacher and pupil that he's now bringing music to everyone in his community at Bolton Clark Winder's aged care facility at Benora Point in the Northern Rivers region. James grew up in the New South Wales Murray River town of Mullamine, where he worked at his uncle's sawmill, which is where he lost his thumb in a workplace accident. He had 2 months of private tuition as a teenager, but then stopped after he lost his access to the piano. Almost 80 years later, moving to Winders gave him a second chance to tickle the ivories. He plays by ear and still can't read music. "Since I came here, I started mucking around a bit, but it all came back to me," he said. "It's lovely. I love doing it. I noticed when I sat down to play, some of the residents would congregate on couches and listen to me. There was one lady down the hall who wouldn't leave her room, but she now comes out to hear me." These days, James loves to learn new pieces and entertain. Diversional therapist Sue Todd said playing the piano has allowed him to build his confidence after the loss of his wife. "We all love hearing him play," she said. "James will always entertain us and make us smile." And that was from the 29th of April, theseniors.com.au.
What a great story. They're just saying that you're never too old. James, what was he, Virginia? 93, wasn't
93, it? And he was 80 when he started to learn.
And the ladies are coming out of the rooms to listen to him.
That's right. Sounds and pretty. That's what you look forward to.
It certainly is. And Virginia, I've just got an interesting end to that story. You know, the old boy there, they said he was from Mullamine. Mm. I used to live at Mullamine years ago. And our neighbour was a fella called Billy Dean. And he had a daughter, Jean. And his place was called Oberdeen, the property. So she was Jean Dean Oberdeen Mullamine. How's that? And I reckon I know this fella there, because I know the Lowes were a big family, yeah, a lot of them in around Mullamine there. Yeah, so that's really, really good. Thanks, yeah. All right, now, hey, it gets from interesting to even better. Now,
that's right.
Who wants to go in a cannabis study?
This is the one. So this is aged residents in cannabis study. Again, this is from www.thesenior.com.au. And the writer is Geraldine Cardozo. And aged care residents in cannabis study. Aged care residents with dementia will be given medicinal cannabis to help treat the disease as part of a groundbreaking study. Dementia sufferers worldwide could benefit from a new study on the use of medical cannabis to treat symptoms of the degenerative condition. Researchers at the University of Notre Dame in Western Australia are recruiting aged care residents to take part in the study. The world-leading trial aimed at improving the quality of life for thousands of dementia and Alzheimer's disease sufferers will be carried out by the university's Institute for Health Research in partnership with Israel-based company MGC Pharmaceuticals. Chief Investigator Amanda Timler said the trial will use medicinal cannabis in the form of an oral spray. "We are using a 3-to-2 ratio of the two main compounds of cannabis, THC or tetrahydrocannabinol, or a psychoactive compound, and CBD, a non-psychoactive compound, which is important as it holds anti-inflammatory properties," Dr. Timler said. We are hoping to see some improvements in the behavioural symptoms associated with dementia, such as agitation, aggression, increase in appetite, improvements in sleeping patterns, and greater quality of life and lower levels of pain. Institute for Health Research Director Professor Jim Code said the study aims to improve the quality of life for people with dementia and Alzheimer's. Planning for the study has been incredibly extensive and involved other key stakeholders, including medical experts, aged care practitioners, and our ethics committee, to ensure the well-being of participants throughout the study, he said. Aged care managers who want to find out more can phone 08 9433 0795. That's 08 9433 0795, and that is from www.thesenior.com.au.
Virginia, thanks very much for that. It sounds like wonderful stuff. It surely does. I might even sign up myself. All right, we're going to stay in the medical vein now. This article, again taken from the Senior newspaper, Monday, May the 22nd, it's called Sign On for Statins Trial. Now, a statin, to my understanding, is basically a cholesterol-reducing medication. It says researchers from the University of Newcastle's Hunter Medical Research Institute and Melbourne's Monash University are seeking volunteers around Australia to take part in a study involving statins. Now, the group is called STAREE, S-T-A-R-E-E. And it stands for Statins in Reducing Events in the Elderly. The project will look at the effect of statins in preventing or prolonging the onset of several health conditions. Researchers are seeking healthy volunteers aged over 70 to help determine the effectiveness of cholesterol-lowering medication. This is looking at preventing heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, dementia, depression, and cancer. Participants will be asked to take medication, with some taking statins and others taking a placebo. They'll do this for 3 to 5 years. They'll need to attend annual follow-ups where researchers will conduct tests. Researchers will be able to send team members to most GPs around the country. Okay, it's pretty easy. Like to go in this test conducted on statins? Call this number, 1-800-770-664. So simply, if you're 70 and over, you can go in this test. It'll be most beneficial to yourself and everybody else. 1-800-770-664.
Well, Dave, we said earlier about my coming back from Italy, and my Italian trip, of course, involved a few visits to museums. And I found this article, which is How to Look at Art and Avoid Gallery Fatigue, according to Art Gallery of New South Wales curator Justin Patton. I wish I'd read it before I went.
I tell you what, there's some fabulous art over there, isn't there?
There is. Very, very exhausting, unless you know how to look. And this gives advice on how to look.
Well, no better person to tell you than him.
So it's by Alice Walker, and it's from the RN, the Art Show of the ABC. So if you've ever come out of a gallery feeling overwhelmed and unsatisfied, you're not alone. Justin Patton is head curator of international art at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, but even he knows all too well the experience of staggering out of gigantic international art museums back to the hotel room for a Panadol and a lie down because you've bitten off more than you can chew. In fact, studies have consistently found people spend less than 30 seconds on average looking at a work of art. How can we slow down, chill out, and navigate the gallery and its contents strategically? Patton, who has written a book on the subject and turned it into a TV series in his native New Zealand, has some tips. 1. Be selective. You're never going to see the 40,000 works on display in the Louvre in one hit. Accept that fact before you get there, Patton advises, and think about what you'd really like to see. I'm now fairly ruthless and I say, look, there might be 5 things I'm going to see and maybe even 1 thing that I'm going to see in this museum, he says. And if you spend good time with one work, it's infinitely more valuable than doing a very grainy kind of tour of the horizon and coming out exhausted. 2. Listen to your body. Traversing big areas of floor space isn't the only physical part of visiting a gallery. Patton says we should pay attention to our body as we walk through an exhibition, even if our response is not positive. It's easy to feel that contemporary art has it in for us from time to time, he says. Not every contemporary artwork wants to be liked back. There are works that are out there that would rather have a tussle with you than a loving embrace. Whatever your reaction, pay attention to it. Look for that physical response, and it might be adoration, it might be arousal, it might be revulsion. But I think those bodily clues, those ungovernable responses, are exactly what you should make us look twice. 3. Listen to the quieter works. Works that instantly make us feel something should be examined, but it's also worth stopping for pieces that don't demand our attention. The point of many really great paintings is that they are indeed really quiet. It's a very sort of dialed-down music that they want you to listen to, Patton says. So if you charge in saying, "All right, tell me what your story is. I've only got 5 minutes and I've got to go and feed the parking meter," there are certain works that will just close down on a viewer. He says paintings in particular aren't as thrilling as digital technology such as film and virtual reality, so they rarely leap off the wall and seize you by the lapels. And you may not have the instant gratification of the kind we're used to when using our smartphones. I think there is an order of experience and there's an order of emotion and feeling which does require the slower download, so to speak, Patton explains. You have to spend time with it, and the spending time is part of the meaning. And I think many of the people who come to art museums are looking for that. 4. Look again. You can't expect to get to know a piece of art by looking at it for less than 30 seconds. It's a daily thing. It's not about going into a museum once every 18 months and getting your booster shot of high culture. It's about living in and with and through art, Patton says. I think with the really great painters, the more you see, the better it gets. And the more time you spend with their work, the more you come to know the language they are speaking, and the more each new experience with their work will resonate. How to start your own collection. Trust your own taste. Check out local galleries and choose work to mark moments in your life. That means looking at the same piece several times before you read the information on the wall. After you read the information wall, and again on your next visit to see if your reaction has changed. I think it's through a kind of layering up of those experiences that you start to acquire what the old-fashioned connoisseur called an eye. That might sound like a lofty and class-bound description, Patton says, but it doesn't mean falling in with the art speak of the inner circle. It's a personal style built from experience. It's your eye. It's about the museum that exists in your mind, the things that you love and the constant conversation you're having with yourself about what you're going to take down off the wall of that inner museum and add to it. And 5, describe. Don't judge. Opinions are important, but they have to be earned, Patton warns, and the way to do that is to practice describing a work and what it's trying to do before jumping to a verdict. Pose yourself a list of questions. What am I looking at here? How is it structured? What are the proportions? What's the texture? What's the heft of this thing? Is it inviting me to quietly, or is it pushing me back on my heels? Is it yelling and yelling at me in a loud voice, or is it doing something more subtle or musical? It's nice to think about interesting artworks as you might think about people. Not rushing into a judgment about them too fast, and not to think about quality, but to think about character. Perhaps that's why we hear paintings described as old friends. Go forth and make some new ones. And that was from the ABC, The Art Show, How to Look at Art and Avoid Gallery Fatigue. And you're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH network. Now, from art galleries and walking around art galleries, perhaps we should look at keeping our health and arthritis and physical activity. So this is an information sheet from the arthritis website, and it's physical activity. This sheet has been written for people with arthritis to provide general information about exercise. It also includes guidelines as to what type and how much exercise to do and general safety tips. This sheet does not provide individual exercises or specific advice for each type of arthritis. So, is physical activity good for arthritis? Research has found that regular exercise is one of the most effective treatments for arthritis. It can help to improve mobility and flexibility of joints, muscle strength, posture and balance, and decrease pain, fatigue, muscle tension and stress. Just as importantly, physical activity will improve your overall health. It can improve the fitness of your health, heart, and lungs, increase bone strength, reduce body weight, and reduce the risk of conditions such as diabetes. It also improves your sleep, energy levels, and mental well-being. Who should exercise? Everyone with or without arthritis should be doing regular, appropriate exercise. The important thing is to choose the activities that best suit your condition, health, and lifestyle. What type of exercise should I do? Before you start to exercise, it's important to ask your doctor and healthcare team to help you develop a suitable program and choose the best activities for you. Everyone's fitness level and limitations will be different, so start with activities that suit you. While some people with arthritis will find a 5-kilometre walk comfortable, others may find walking around the block difficult. Generally, you will need to do a mix of flexibility, to maintain or improve the mobility of your joints and muscles. Examples include moving the joint as far as it can, muscle stretches and yoga. Muscle strengthening. Strong muscles help to support and take pressure off sore joints, strengthen bones and improve balance. An example is using weights, resistant bands or gym machines. Fitness, to improve the health of your heart and lungs. These activities use the larger muscles in the body rather than exercising a specific area and may make you puff a little. An example is brisk walking. There isn't just one particular exercise or activity that is recommended for all people with arthritis. Choose an activity that you enjoy and that is convenient for you to do. Low-impact exercises with less weight or force going through your joints are usually most comfortable. Examples of low-impact activities include walking, exercises in water such as hydrotherapy, swimming or water exercise classes, strength training, tai chi, yoga and pilates. You can do 30 minutes continuously or combine several shorter sessions. Don't forget that activities such as gardening, playing with pets or taking the stairs rather than the lift can count as exercise. How will I know if I've done too much? It can be hard to predict how your body will cope with a new activity. The most important thing to do is to listen to your body. A general guide is the 2-hour pain rule. If you have extra or unusual pain for more than 2 hours after exercising, you've done too much. Should I exercise through pain? No. You should stop exercising if it is causing you unusual pain or increases your pain beyond what is normal for you. Exercising through this type of pain may lead to injury or worsening of your arthritic symptoms. Note, many people with arthritis have some amount of pain all the time. This is not a reason to avoid exercise. You should only stop if you notice extra or unusual pain while you are exercising. When is the best time to exercise? It doesn't matter when you exercise, as long as you do. If possible, try to exercise when you have least pain, you are least stiff, you are least tired, and your medicines are having the most effect. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about how to time your medicine with exercise. This may help to make your exercise session more comfortable. talk to your doctor and or health professional before starting an exercise program. A physiotherapist or exercise physiologist can suggest safe exercises and make sure you're doing your exercises correctly to prevent an injury. You may need more rest and less exercise during a flare, a period of increased pain and stiffness. Do not vigorously exercise a joint that is red, hot, swollen, or painful. Always build up slowly. When you first start, do less than you think you will need to manage. If you cope well, do a little more next time and keep building up gradually. Always start your exercise with some gentle movements to warm up your body and your joints. This can help prevent pain and injury during exercise. Cool down at the end of your session with some gentle movements and stretches. This can help prevent muscle pain and stiffness the next day. You can contact your local arthritis office for more information sheets on arthritis. And that was from the Arthritis Association, their information sheet.
Virginia, thank you. Some very good information there on the, I guess, terrible affliction of arthritis. Well, my dear, that's about all we've got time for today. I'd like to say thank you very, very much. You had to do all the work today and you've done it very, very well.
Well, thank you, Dave. It was a joy to come back, I have to say.
And welcome back from Italy.
Thank you.
Got your next trip planned?
I have. In fact, next week I'm going up to the Barrier Reef. Heavens. I'm doing all these things before arthritis really gets me.
And we'll look forward to catching up when you get back. You've been listening to Virginia Collins and Dave Jeffrey on Optimal Life.